Smoke drifted on, and his reputation as a good artist went before him. He cut east until he found a town with a telegraph office and sent a wire to Boston. He and Sally had worked out a code. He was SB and she was SJ. He waited in the town for a night and a day before receiving the reply that Sally was fine. The doctors had removed the lead from her, and her doctor in Boston did not think an operation would be necessary for childbirth. Smoke crossed the Tempest and then followed the Purgatoire down to Slim's General Store. A little settlement had been built around the old trading post, but it was dying fast, with only a few ramshackle buildings remaining. Smoke stabled his horses and stepped into the old store. An old man sat on a stool behind the article-littered counter. He lifted his eyes as Smoke walked in.
Adriel, sure, just exactly what you might be, son. But if you got any fresh news worth talking about, you're sure welcome, whether you buy anything or not.
Smoke looked around him. The store was empty of customers.
Your name, Slim?
Has been for nigh on 70 years. Kinda late to be changing it now. What can I do you out of, stranger?
Do you have some food and supplies?
Well, this is a general store. Look around. What brings you here?
I am an artiste. I have traveled all the way from New York City, wandering the West, recreating famous gunfights on paper for posterity. I intend to become quite famous through my sketchings.
Slim looked at the outfit that Smoke had selected for that morning. It was all the old man could do to keep a straight face. Purple breeches and flame-red silk shirt and colored glasses.
Uh-huh. Is that right?
It certainly is. And I would just imagine that you are a veritable well of knowledge concerning famous gunfighters and mountain men. Are you not?
I ain't real sure what it is you just said, partner. Are you asking me if I knowed any gunfighters or mountain men?
That's quite correct, Mr. Slim.
And your name be...
Shirley De Beers.
Lord have mercy. Well, Shirley, yeah, I seen my share of gunfights. I personal planted 6 or 8 right back yonder. What is it you want to know about?
I have come from New York in search of any information about the most famous mountain man of all time. And I was told in Denver that you and you alone could give me information about him. Can you?
Slim looked at Smoke, and then his eyes began to twinkle.
Boy, I come out here in 35, and I knowed 'em all. And little Kit Carson, you know he wasn't much over 5 feet tall. Fremont, Smith, Big Jim, Caleb Greenwood, John Jacobs. Hell, son, you just named some, and I bet I knew 'em and traded with 'em.
But from what I've learned... You didn't name the most famous of all of them.
Yeah, that's right. I sure didn't, Mr. Smoke Jensen.
Oh, shit.
I knew it.
How'd you know? I never laid eyes on you in my life.
Just a guess. I'd heard people describe you for, and I knowed what went up on the sugar loaf with them gunnies and your wife. I figured you'd be coming on long before long. But what give you away was your accent. I've had folks from New York down in here for. Your accent is all wrong.
And I guess I'd better start working on that, right?
Wrong. What you'd better do is shift locations. You ain't never gonna talk like them folks. You best say you're from Pennsylvania or some such. From a little farm outside Pittsburgh on the river. That ought to do it.
Heard any word about Preacher?
Some. Getting on in years. But he's all right, last I heard. He's living with some half-breed kids of his up in Wyoming, up close to the Montana line.
It's good to know he's still alive. But I can't figure out why he won't come live with me and Sally up on Sugarloaf.
Well, that ain't his way, Smoke, and you know it. He's happy, boy. That's what's important. Why, hell, Smoke, there's a whole passel of them old boys up yonder. There's P.U., Lobo, Audie, Nighthawk, Dupree, Grey Bull, 2-3 more. Couple of them has died since they helped you out 3-4 years back. Hell, I'm thinking hard on selling out and heading up that way to join them. Getting on in years myself. I'd like to have me a woman to rub my back every now and then. But... I probably won't do that. Stay right here till I keel over dead. But Preacher and them, they happy, boy. They got their memories and they got each other. And when it's time for them to go, they'll turn their faces to the sky and sing their death songs. Don't worry none about Preacher Smoke. He raised you better than that.
You're right, Slim. As much as I'd like to see him, I'm glad he can't see me in this getup today.
He'd probably laugh so hard he'd have a heart attack for sure. I got to tell you, Smoke, you do look well. Singular.
But it's working.
So far, I reckon 'tis. Let's talk about that. You got a plan, Smoke?
About getting in a dead river?
Perzactly.
No, not really. But for sure, I'm going in like this.
My work. Just watch your back.
Always do. The outlaws think they've got everybody convinced there's only one way in and one way out. I don't believe that.
Oh, that's a pile of buffalo shit. You get on with the Utes, don't you?
Stayed with them many times.
White Wolf and a bunch of his people is camped over just west of Cordova Pass. The word is from old-timers that I talked to, White Wolf's braves make a game out of slipping in and out of Dead River. White Wolf ain't got no use for none of them people in there. They've been hard on Injuns. You talk to White Wolf. He's an old friend and enemy, a preacher.
Smoke knew what Slim meant. You might spend a summer living with the Injuns and the winter fighting them. That's just the way it was. Nearly anyone could ride into an Injun camp and eat and spend the night and not be bothered. Of course, they might kill you when you tried to leave, but at least you'd die after a good night's sleep and a full belly. Injuns are notional folks.
I did meet and sketch and convince some outlaw named Calhoun. Give me a note. Here.
A note from Calhoun. He's a bad one, about half crazy. He let you sketch him?
Yep. Paid me $20. I think he was getting suspicious when I started talking about Dead River. Pulled a gun on me.
Oh, what'd you do then?
Scream like a girl.
That'll do it. Well, you can bet that Calhoun has told his buddies about you planning on coming in. And you can bet somebody is right now checking on your back trail. And they'll come here for long. So you best draw me two or three of them pictures of yourn, and I'll stick them up on the wall.
Smoke spent several days at Slim's, relaxing and learning all that the old man knew about Dead River, Rex Davidson, and the man who called himself Daggett. And Slim knew plenty.
Day's the scum of the earth, Smoke. Every last one of them. There's nothing those men won't do for money. Every man in Dead River has at least one murder warrant out on his head.
Well, that's going to make my job a bit easier.
Smoke, if you do get inside that outlaw stronghold, don't you for one second ever drop that act of yours. Because if and you do, sure as hell someone will pick up on it and you'll be a long time dying. And don't trust nobody in there, not one solitary soul. You can't afford to do that. Now, personal, Smoke, I think you're a damn fool for trying this. But I can see Preacher's invisible hand writ all over you. He'd do the same thing. I ain't going to try to turn you around. You're a grown-up man.
They have people being held as slaves in there, so I'm told.
Yeah, that's right. But some of them would just as soon turn you in as look at you for favor's sake. You know what I mean?
I know. How many you figure are in there, Slim? Or do you have any way of knowing that?
Ain't no way of really telling till you get in there. Them outlaws come and go so much. Might be as many as 300. Might be as low as 50. But that's just a real bad one, Smoke. That ain't counting the shop owners and clerks and whores and such and the minister.
Minister? Wait a minute. We'll get back to him. What about the clerks and shop owners and those types of people?
What about them? Oh, I get you. Don't concern yourself with them. They're just as bad in their own way as them that ride out robbing and killing. The clerks and shopkeepers are all on the run for crimes they done. There ain't no decent people in that town. Let me tell you something, boy. When a baby is born to them shady gals in there, they either kill it outright or tote it into the nearest town and toss it in the street.
I can't understand why this town hasn't attracted more attention.
It has, boy. But like I done told you, can't no legal thing be done because no decent person that goes in there ever comes out. Now, I hear tell there's a federal marshal over in Trinidad that might be convinced to get a posse together if somebody would go in and clear a path for him. His name's Wild.
Wild. Tell me about this so-called minister in Dead River.
Name is Tustin. And he's a real college-educated minister, too. Got him a church and all that goes with it.
But you said there wasn't any decent people in the town.
There ain't, boy. Tustin is on the run just like all the rest. Killed his wife and kids back east somewheres. He's also a horse thief, a bank robber, and a whoremonger. But he still claims to be a Christian. Damnedest thing I ever heard of.
And he has a church and preaches?
Damn sure does. And don't go to sleep during his sermons, neither. If you do, he'll shoot you.
You're serious?
You bet your boots I am. You get in that place, Smoke, and you're gonna see sights like the witch you ain't never seen afore.
And you've never been in there?
Hell no!
You think my wife was attacked just because of a 20-year-old hate this Davidson has for Preacher?
I'd bet on it. Davidson lay right over there in that corner and swore he'd get Preacher and anyone else who was a friend of his'n. That's why them outlaws is so hard on Injuns, especially the Utes. Preacher was adopted into the Ute tribe, you know.
Yeah, so was I.
All the more reason for him to hate you. Law and order is closing in on the West, Smoke. And I reckon for the most part that's a good thing. Them like that scum that's over to Dead River don't have that many more places to run to. And it's time to wipe that rattler's nest out. Sam Bass was killed about 2 years ago. Billy the Kid's about run out his string, so I hear. John Wesley Hardin is in jail down in Texas. The law is hot on the trail of the James Gang. Bill Longley was hanged a couple years back. The list is just getting longer and longer of so-called bad men that finally got their due. You know what I mean, Smoke?
Yeah. And I can add some to the list you just named. You heard about Clay Allison?
Different stories about how he died. You know the truth of it?
Louis Longmont told me that Clay got drunk and fell out of his wagon back in 77. A wheel ran over his head and killed him.
Oh, shit. Damn shame. I hear Curly Bill is going around talking bad about the Earp boys. He didn't close that mouth. He's going to join that list, too, and you can believe that.
300 bad ones. Looks like I just may have bitten off more than I can chew up and spit out.
That's one of the few things you've said about this adventure of yours that makes any sense, boy.
But it don't mean I'm going to give it up, Slim.
I'm afeard you'd say that. Boy, I don't like that grin on your face. Now, what the hell have you got up that sleeve of yours?
Where's the nearest wire office, Slim?
Trinidad. It's a real big city. Near about 3,000 people in it, all jammed up like apples in a crate. Gives me the willies.
That U.S. Marshal might be in town.
It could be. I know he comes and goes out of there a whole lot. What's on your mind, boy?
Slim, can you get a message to Preacher?
Sure. Good God, boy. You ain't figured on dealing Preacher in on this, are you?
Oh, no. Just tell him I'm all right and I'm glad to hear that he's doing okay.
I'll do her. You keep in touch, boy, and good luck.
Well, mister, aren't you all dressed up? Where's the party?
Morning, Marshal. I'm here to get deputized.
Now, why would I do that?
Because I'm going to help you clear out Dead River, Marshal.
If you got a death wish, boy, or are you as goofy as you look?
Well, the outfit is a little goofy, I'll give you that.
A little? Boy, I'd say you're about 10 cows short of a herd. What's your name?
Smoke Jensen.
Jensen? I'll be damned. Come on, let's talk somewhere where we won't be disturbed. All right, this here livery stable should be good. You sure you're Smoke?
Just show me something to shoot.
Well, I've seen a lot of hard men in my day. I know what they look like, even with those britches on. I believe you. I see it in your eyes.
That's what the sunglasses are for.
Good thinking. Now listen here, Smoke. The reason I wanted us to talk out here is because I don't trust nobody when it comes to that lousy damn bunch of crud over at Dead River.
You don't suspect the sheriff of this county of being in cahoots with them, do you?
Oh, no, not at all. He's a good man. We've been working together trying to come up with a plan to clean out that mess for months. It's just that you never really know who might be listening. Now, you want to be a U.S. Marshal?
Yeah, to protect myself legally.
Well, that's good thinking. But this plan of yours ain't too bright, the way I see it. Let me get this straight. You're going to act as point man for a posse to clean up Dead River?
That's my intention. At my signal, the posse will come in.
Uh-huh.
You, of course, will lead the posse.
I was afraid you was going to say that.
So you in?
Let me check my Dodgers to see if there are any wanted flyers out on you. Matter of course. Can't have a criminal as a deputy.
I reckon not. You go about your business, Marshal. I'll hang around town. But if anybody asks, I'm Shirley De Beers. I'm an artiste.
Well, in that getup, Shirley's sure as hell not a fighter.
Trinidad was built at the foot of Raton Pass on a foothill chain of the Culebra Range. The streets of the town twisted and turned deviously, giving it a curiously foreign look. Purgatoire River separated the residential area from the business district. Trinidad was known as a tough place, full of rowdies. Due to its relative closeness to Dead River, Smoke kept a close eye on his back trail. On his third day in town, sensing someone was following him, he picked up his pursuers. They were three rough-looking men. Inwardly, he sighed, wanting nothing so much as to shed his role as Shirley De Beers' foppish artist and strap on his guns. But he knew he had to endure what he'd started for a while longer. He deliberately avoided any contact with any lawmen, especially Jim Wilde. He'd spent his time sketching various buildings of the town and some of the more colorfully dressed Mexicans. But the three hard-looking gun hogs who were always following him began to get on his nerves. He decided to bring it to a head, but to do it in such a way as to reinforce his fop act. With the sketch pad in hand, Smoke turned to face the three men who were standing across a plaza from him. He began sketching, and he could tell very quickly that his actions were not being received good-naturedly. One of the men made that perfectly clear in a hurry.
Hey! Just what in the hell you think you're doing, boy?
I was sketching you and your friends. I didn't think you would mind. I'm sorry if I offended you.
Smoke was conscious of the sheriff of the county and of Jim Wilde watching from across the plaza, standing under the awning of a cantina. The outlaw, Smoke assumed he was an outlaw, pointed to the sketch pad on the ground and grinned at Smoke.
Well, you sure did offend me, sissy pants. Now pick that there picture book up off from the ground and give me that drawing you just done of us.
I most certainly will do no such thing, you ruffian. You struck me. How dare you strike me? You animal.
What you got here, Jake? Looks to me like you done treat a girl dressed up in breeches.
I don't know what the hell it is, Red, but he sure talks funny. Hey, Shorty.
Yeah, Jake?
Let's see if he'll fight, Shorty. Hey, what do you say, sissy boy?
Jake shoved Smoke. Shorty and Red moved in. The three of them began pushing Smoke back and forth between them, roughing him up, but doing no real physical damage, just bruising his dignity some. A crowd had gathered around, and most of the men were drinking.
Now, hey, you all stop this immediately. I want you to stop this now. You hooligans.
Oh, my. We hooligans, boys.
Shorty reached out and with a hard jerk sent Smoke's trousers down around his ankles.
I guess Cahoon was right, Shorty. He ain't got a bit of sand in him.
Oh, don't hurt me anymore. I can't stand pain.
Oh, hell, Jake, we wasting our time. Sissy boy here ain't gonna fight.
I know. Let's make him eat some horse shit.
What? Shorty, you... No, we don't find out what we came to find out. He's yeller.
That sure was funny the time we made that drummer eat a pile of it, though. I got an idea.
A man named Shorty unbuttoned his trouser fly.
Here's a little something to remember me by.
Pee right on Smoke. Smoke's thoughts were savage.
All right, let's go. Oh, my. I
do feel better.
The three hard cases then left, and the crowd broke up, with no one offering to help Smoke to his feet. Smoke hauled up his britches, found his sketch pad, and brushed himself off. Then, with as much dignity as he could muster, he walked across the plaza. He passed by the sheriff and the U.S. Marshal.
I think I'm in. Picked a hard goddamn way to do it.
Well, let's just say it's going to be interesting when I come out of this costume.
We'll be there. There's a packet for you in your room.
The packet contained a U.S. Marshal's badge, his written federal commission, and a letter. It said that on the night of Smoke's seventh day in Trinidad, 2 hours after dusk, unless Smoke could get a signal out to tell him differently, the U.S. Marshals and various sheriffs and deputies from a four-county area, beefed up with volunteers from throughout the area, would strike at Dead River. They would begin getting into position just at dusk. It would be up to Smoke to take out the guards at the pass. Do it any way he saw fit. And to Smoke's surprise, the marshal had a plant inside Dead River, one that had been there for about 6 months. A woman, Hope Ferris. It would be up to Smoke to contact her. The marshal had no way of knowing whether she was alive or dead. They'd received no word from her in several months. They feared she might have been taken prisoner, or worse. Smoke pulled out of Trinidad before dawn the next morning, after resupplying the night before. He headed west, avoiding the tiny settlements for the most part. He followed an old engine trail that cut between Cordova Pass to the east and the Cacharas Pass to the west. He found what he hoped was White Wolf's ute camp and approached it cautiously. They seemed curious about this big, strong-looking white man who dressed and behaved like a damn fool.
Hello? Hello? Would any of you care to share some of my food in exchange for spending the night?
You do not mean us any harm?
Oh, me? Of course not. I abhor violence. I'm just looking for shelter before I go along my way.
Come ahead.
Smoke soon found himself by the fire, talking to White Wolf himself.
Please explain this to me once again.
I'm going to Dead River after this, Chief White Wolf. There, I will draw to my heart's content.
You are a strange man to even consider going into the outlaw town. Why would the adopted son of my brother, Preacher, wish to know about that evil place?
Aw, shit. How did you know I wasn't who I claim to be, White Wolf?
Many things give you away to us, but probably not to the white man. The white man looks at many things but sees little. Your hands are as hard as stones. And while you draw well, that is not what you are.
All right, then. I'm going to level the town. There's too much evil coming from that one place. And there are people there who I'm going to make sure die hard.
I see. You're a very brave man, much like Preacher.
Few are as brave and noble as Preacher.
That is true. And is my brother well?
Slim Dugas just told me that Preacher and a few other mountain men are well and living up near Montana.
That is the truth. Preacher's living with the children of my sister, woman who speaks with soft voice. Because she married Preacher, the children are recognized as pure and are not called apples.
Apples were red on the outside and white on the inside. Indians practice their own form of discrimination.
It's good to know they are true human beings.
As you are, Smoke Jensen.
Thank you. I have a joke for you.
A good laugh makes a good meal even better.
I was told that most people believe there is but one way in and one way out of Dead River.
There are many ways in and out of that evil place. There are ways in and out that the white man does not know and never will know.
Smoke passed around several tobacco sacks, and the Indians packed small clay pipes and smoked in contentment. Smoke rolled a cigarette and joined them.
You still haven't told me how you knew I was the adopted son of Preacher, White Wolf.
If I told you that, Smoke, then you would know as much as I know. And I think that would not be a good thing for one as young as you.
It is true that too much knowledge learned before one is ready is not a good thing.
Indeed.
Smoke waited. The chief would get to the matter at Dead River when he was damn good and ready. White Wolf smoked his pipe down to coals and carefully tapped out the ashes, then handed the pipe to his woman.
It has been a fine game for us to slip up on the outlaw town and watch them. All without their knowing, of course.
Of course. Anyone who does not know that the Ute is as brave as the bear, cunning as the wolf, and sharp-eyed as the eagle is ignorant.
The braves all nodded their heads in agreement. This white man was no fool, but they all wished he'd do something about his manner or dress.
A plan has come to me, White Wolf, but it is a very dangerous plan, if you and your braves agree to it.
I am listening, Smoke Jensen.
I met with a man in Trinidad. I believe he can be trusted. He's a government man. His name is Jim Wild.
I know this man named Wild. He carries Indian blood in his veins. Comanche from Texas place. He is to be trusted.
I think so too. Could you get a message to him?
Does the wind sigh?
Getting his sketch pad, Smoke sketched the campfire scene, leaving the faces of the Utes blank but drawing himself whole. On the bottom of the sketch, he wrote a note to Wild.
If you agree to my plan, have this delivered to Wild.
If we agree, it will be done. What is this thing you have planned?
Times have not been good for you and your people.
They have been both good and bad.
Winter is not that far away.
It is closer tonight than it was last night, but not as close as it will be in the morning.
There are guns and much food and clothing and warm blankets in the outlaw town.
But not as many as in the town of Trinidad.
But the people in Trinidad are better than the people in Dead River.
A matter of opinion. But I see your point. I think that I also see what you have in mind.
If you agree, some of your people will surely die, White Wolf.
Far better to die fighting like a man than to grovel and beg for scraps of food from a non-human being.
Only the Indians felt they were real people. They figured most of the whites had no soul. At least that's the best way they could find to explain it.
I know some of how you feel. I do not think you want the buildings of the town.
I spit on the buildings of the outlaw town.
When the battle is over, you may do with them as you see fit.
Wait by the fire. I will talk this over with my people.
Smoke sat alone for more than an hour. Then White Wolf returned with his braves and they took their places.
We have agreed to your plan, Smoke.
They shook hands solemnly.
Now it depends on the government man, Jim Wild.
I will send a brave to see him at first light. Once he has agreed, then we will make our final plans.
Agreed.
They once more stuffed their pipes and smoked, with no one talking. Finally, White Wolf spoke up.
There is a young squaw, Rising Star. She does not have a man. She's very hard to please. I've thought of beating her for her stubbornness. Do you want to share her robes this night?
I am honored, White Wolf. But I have a woman, and I am faithful to her only.
That is good. You're an honorable man.
I'll pull out at first light. I'll be camped at the head of the Sangre de Cristo Creek, waiting to hear from you.
It will be interesting to see if the white men at the outlaw town die well.
I think they will not.
I think you are right.
Smoke angled down the slopes and onto the flats, then cut northwest, reaching his campsite by late afternoon. He made his camp and waited. And waited. It was three full days before a brave from White Wolf's band made an appearance.
I have returned with your note.
Thank you, Lone Eagle. It's from the Marshal. He's agreed to the plan and compliments me on enlisting your tribe.
Yes, the Comanche Lawman told me the same thing. All the rest of your plan is to remain the same. Now I must return and tell him when you plan to enter the outlaw town.
Smoke had calculated the distance, about a day and a half of riding over rough country.
Tell Wild I'll enter the town day after tomorrow, or late afternoon. Do you know a place near the town where you can hide some guns for me?
Yes. Behind the saloon with an ugly picture of a bucket on the front of it. The bucket is filled with what I think is supposed to be blood.
The bloody bucket?
Yes. Behind the little building where the men go to relieve themselves, there is a rotting pile of lumber. I will put them under the lumber.
Good. Be careful, Lone Eagle. If you're caught, you'll die hard.
I know. The Comanche lawman says that 2 hours after dark, on the seventh day of your entering the outlaw place, we shall attack. And White Wolf says that you need not worry about the guards. Consider yourself only with the town. It might take the main body of men an hour to fight their way to your location.
Tell White Wolf thank you. It'll be a good coup for you all.
Yes. The outlaws in the town have not been kind to my people. They have seized and raped some of our young girls. Twice, they have taken young braves and have been cruel beyond any reason. One they cut off his feet and left him to die slowly. They called it sport. On the night of the seventh day, we shall have our sport with the outlaws.
They shall not die well, I am thinking.
We are counting on that.
The outlaws of Dead River had had their way for years, torturing, raping, robbing, and looting, enslaving the innocent and ravaging the unsuspecting for several hundred miles or more in any direction. Now they were about to have the tables turned on them, and Smoke knew the more fortunate ones would die under his guns or the guns of the posse. It would be very unpleasant for those taken alive by the Utes, because the Utes knew ways of torture that would make the Spanish Inquisitioners green with envy. Dying well was an honor for the Indians, and if a prisoner died well, enduring hours and sometimes days of torture, they would sing songs about that person for years, praising his courage. That person who died well would not be forgotten. But the Indians had nothing but contempt for a man who begged and cried and died in dishonor. They had their own code of honor and justice, and the whites had theirs. There were those who said the red man was nothing but a barbaric savage, but truth be told, he'd learned to scalp from the European white man. True, the Indians were different, but they would not steal from within their own tribe. The white man couldn't say that. War was a game to the Indians, until the white man entered the picture and began killing in war. For the Indians, for centuries, counting coup by striking with a club or stick was preferable to killing. So it's pretty questionable who was the savage and who was the instructor in barbarism. Smoke had lived with the Indians and in many ways preferred their lifestyle to the white ways. Smoke, as did nearly anyone else who learned their ways, found the Indians to be honest, extremely gentle, and patient with their children or any captured children of any color. The Indians lived a hard life in a hard land, so it was foolish to think that their ways were barbaric. They were, Smoke felt, just different. Smoke felt nothing for the outlaws in the town. He knew the truth in the statement that whatever befalls a man, that man usually brought the bad onto himself. Every person comes eventually to a fork in the road. The direction that person takes comes from within, not from without, as many uninformed choose to believe when slobbering pity on some criminal. The outlaw trail is one that a person can leave at any time. They're not chained to it. An outlaw is in many ways like an ignorant person who knows he's ignorant and is proud of it, enjoying wallowing in blind unenlightenment. Knowing what he is wrong, too goddamn lazy to climb the ladder of knowledge, too inwardly slovenly to make the effort of reaching out and working to better himself. To hell with him.
Oh, this is such a different world for me now. And a world I fear that I no longer belong in.
What an odd thing to say, dear.
Sally smiled and glanced at her mother. She shifted her gaze to her brothers and sisters and father, all of them seated in the elegant sitting room of the mansion. And all of them, including her father, not quite sure they believed anything their sister had told them about her husband, this seemingly wild man called Smoke.
Odd, mother? Oh, I think not. It's just what a person wants. What that person becomes accustomed to, that's all. You would consider our life hard. We just consider it living free.
Dear, I am sure you find it quite amusing to entertain us with your wild stories about the West and this person you married. But really now, Sally, Don't you think it a bit much to ask us to believe all these wild yarns?
Wild yarns, Father?
Jordan, who was Sally's oldest brother, and a boar in a stuffed shirt if I ever seen one, took some snuff.
All that dribble-drabble about Wild West is just a bunch of flap-doodle as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, Jordan, you'll never change. And don't ever come west to where I live. You wouldn't last 15 minutes before someone would slap you flat on your backside.
Jordan scowled at Sally, but kept his mouth closed for a change.
You're all so safe and secure and comfortable here in Keene, in all your nice homes. If you had trouble, you'd shout for a constable to handle it. There must be more than a dozen police officers here in this town alone. Where I live in Colorado, there aren't a dozen deputies within a 2,000-square-mile radius.
I will accept that, Sally. I've heard the horror stories about law and order in the West, but what amazes me is how you handle the business of law and order.
We handle it, Father, usually ourselves.
I don't understand, Sally. Do you mean that where you live, women are allowed to sit on juries?
No, Penny, you silly goose. Most of the time, there isn't even a trial.
Sally's mother, Abigail, put her knitting aside and looked at her daughter.
Dear, now I'm confused. All civilized places have due process. Don't you have due process where you live?
We damn sure do.
Sally! Whatever in the world do you mean, dear?
Well, most of the time it's from a Henry.
Aha! Now we're getting to it. This Henry person, he's a judge, I gather.
No, a Henry is a rifle. Why, last year when those TF riders roped and dragged Pearlie and then attacked the house, I knocked two of them out of the saddle from the front window of the house.
You struck two men? While they were stealing your pearls?
No, Betsy. Pearlie is our foreman at the ranch. Some TF riders slung a loop around him and tried to drag him to death. And hell no, I didn't strike them. When they attacked the house, I shot them.
Good Lord! Where was your husband while this tragedy was unfolding?
Well, at the time, I think he was in Fontana, in the middle of a gunfight. I believe that's where he was.
They all looked at Sally as if she had suddenly grown horns and a tail. Smiling, Sally reached into her bag and brought out a copy of Haywood's newspaper, which detailed the incident at the Sugar Loaf, where she and young Bob Colby had fought off the attackers.
Here, Father. Here are the newspaper reports about it.
Incredible! My own daughter in a gunfight. And at the trial, dear, you were, of course, acquitted, were you not?
Father, there was no trial.
An inquest, then?
No, we just hauled off the bodies and buried them out on the range.
John Reynolds blinked. He was speechless. And for an attorney, as he and his sons were, that was a damn miracle.
Hauled off the bodies? How utterly grotesque.
Well, what would you have us do, Jordan? Leave them in the front yard? They would have attracted coyotes and wolves and buzzards and smelled bad, too.
Jordan turned an ill-looking shade of green, and Sally was shocked to find herself thinking, what a lily-livered bunch of pansies. Abigail covered her mouth with a handkerchief. Penny was reading another copy of Haywood's newspaper.
Oh, my God! According to this account, there were 10 people shot down in the streets of Fontana in 1 week.
Yes, sister. Fontana was a rather rowdy place until smoke and the gunfighters cleaned it up. You've heard of Louis Longmont, Father?
Sally's father nodded numbly, not trusting his voice to speak. He wondered if, 20-odd years ago, the doctor had handed him the wrong baby. Sally had always been a bit, free-spirited.
Louis was there, his hands full of Colts.
Sally's nieces and nephews were standing in the archway, listening, their mouths hanging open in fascination. This was stuff you only read about in the dime novels. But Aunt Sally, and this was the first time most of them could remember even seeing her, had actually lived it. This was exciting stuff. Sally grinned, knowing she had a captive audience.
There was, let's see, Charlie Starr, Luke Nations, Dan Greentree, Leah Wood, Gary Webb, Pistol LaRue, Bill Foley, Sunset Hatfield, Toot Tuna, Sutler Cordova, Red Shingletown, Bill Flagler, Old Buttermilk, Jay Church, The Apache Kid, Silver Jim, Dad Weaver, Hard Rock, Lynch. They all stayed at our ranch, the Sugarloaf. They were really very nice gentlemen, courtly in manner.
But those men you've just named, I've read about them all. They're killers.
No, Jordan. They're gunfighters. Like my smoke. They have killed, yes, but always because they were pushed into it. Or they killed for right and reason and law and order.
Killed for right and reason.
And your husband, this smoke person, he's killed men?
Oh, yes. About 100 or so. That's not counting Indians on the warpath. But not very many of them. You see, Smoke was raised by the mountain man, Preacher. And we get along well with the Indians.
Preacher, the most famous, infamous mountain man of the West?
That's him. Oh, I've got a picture of Smoke. Here you are, Father. That's my Smoke. Handsome, isn't he?
Wanted, dead or alive. The outlaw and murderer Smoke.
Ye gods, this is a wanted poster. The man is wanted by the authorities.
No, Father. That was a put-up job. Smoke is not wanted by the law. He never has been on the dodge.
Well, thank God for small favors.
Sally passed around the newspaper she had saved over the months from both Fontana and Big Rock. The family read them all, disbelief in their eyes.
Monty Carson is your sheriff? But I have seen legal papers that stated he was a notorious gunfighter.
Well, he was, but he wasn't an outlaw. And Johnny North is now a farmer rancher and one of our neighbors and close friends.
They'd all heard of Johnny North. He was almost as famous as Smoke Jensen.
According to this paper, Louis Longmont is a man of great wealth. His holdings are quite vast. Newspaper, hotels, a casino in Europe, and a major stockholder in a railroad.
He's also a famous gunfighter and gambler, and a highly educated man, and quite the gentleman.
Well, this is all very good, but when is your husband coming out for a visit, Sally?
As soon as he finishes with his work.
His work being with his guns?
That is correct. Why do you ask, Father?
Well, I'm just wondering if I should alert the governor so he can call out the militia.
On the morning he set out for Dead River, Smoke had dressed in his most outlandish clothing. He had even found a long hawk feather and stuck it to that silly cap of his. He knew he would probably be searched once inside or maybe even outside the outlawed town. And what to do with his short-barreled .44 worried him. He had finally decided to roll it up in some dirty long handles and stick it in his dirty clothes bag, storing it in his pack. He was reasonably sure it would go undetected there. It was the best idea he could come up with anyway. He had adjusted the bonnets on Drifter and his pack horse, with Drifter giving him a look that promised trouble if this crap went on much longer. They were heading due north. A few more miles and he would cut west into the Sangre de Cristo range and into the unknown. He sensed unfriendly eyes watching him as he rode. He made no effort to search out his watchers, because a foppish gent from back east would not have developed that sixth sense. But White Wolf had told him that there were guards all along the trail, long before one ever reached the road that would take him to Dead River. Smoke rode on and soon came to a road. He had no idea what to expect, but the sign that was put up startled him with its openness.
Dead River West. If you don't have business in Dead River, stay out.
Smoke rode on. Soon he had huge mountains on either side of him. To the north, one reared up over 14,000 feet. To the south, towering peaks rammed into the sky more than 13,000 feet. Snow-capped year-round. The road he was on twisted and climbed and narrowed dramatically. The road was just wide enough for a wagon and maybe a horse to meet it coming from the other direction. Another wagon and somebody would have to give, but where? Then Smoke began to notice yellow flags every few hundred yards. A signal for wagon masters, he supposed. But whether the flags meant stop or go, he had no idea. He rode on a couple of miles, always west and always climbing.
Just hold it right there, Fancy Pants. And keep your hands where I can see them. You get itchy, and I'll blow your butt out of the saddle.
I mean you no harm. I'm Shirley DeBeers, the artiste.
What you gonna be is dead if you don't shut that goddamn mouth. Now get off that horse and stand still.
Men came out of cover from every direction. There was Hart, the back shooter. Gridley, who murdered his best friend and partner and then raped and killed the man's wife. Nappy, a killer for hire. There were others, but Smoke didn't immediately recognize them, except for the fact that they were hard cases.
Take off that coat and toss it to me.
Certainly. Here you are.
Good. Now frisk him, Nappy.
Smoke was searched and searched professionally. Even his boots were removed and inspected. His pack ropes were untied and his belongings dumped in the middle of the road.
Oh, I say now, is that necessary, gentlemen?
Shut up!
His belongings were inspected, but his bag of dirty underwear was tossed to one side after only a glance. Luckily, the bag landed on a pile of clean clothes and the weight of the .44 didn't make a sound. Finally, the search was over, and the men stared at him for a moment.
I reckon Cahoon and them others was right. He ain't got nothing but a pocket knife. And it's dull.
Is my good friend Cahoon in town? Oh, I hope so. He's such a nice man.
Shut your mouth!
What about it, Hart?
I reckon some of us can take Silly Boy on in.
I say, are some of you good fellows going to help me gather up and repack my possessions?
You must be stupider than you look, sissy.
Oh, no. Here. You're right. Let me help you. There. I helped.
Now, you don't have to be so rough.
Oh, my goodness. We hurt his feelings, boys. We gotta stop being so rough.
Right then and there, Smoke began to wonder if he was gonna be able to last a week. He calmed himself and waved his hand at his pile of belongings.
I say, as you men can see from your trashing of my possessions, I am low on supplies. Might I be allowed to continue on to Dead River and resupply?
Cahoon was supposed to have given you a note. Let me see the note, sissy pants.
I am not a sissy. I am merely a man with great sensibilities.
Give me the goddamn note.
All right, all right. And here, then.
That's Cahoon's writing, all right. What about it, Hart? It's up to you.
Yeah, let him go on in. He can draw us all, and then we'll have some fun with him.
Smoke saw the man's wink.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I know just the person to give him to.
Who?
Brute.
Smoke had heard of Brute Pittman. A huge man, 300 pounds or more of savage perversions. He was wanted all over the eastern half of the nation for the most disgusting crimes against humanity. But oddly enough, Smoke had never heard of a warrant against him west of the Mississippi River. Bounty hunters had tried to take him, but Brute was hard to kill. It was rumored that Brute had preyed on the miners in the gold camps for years, stashing away a fortune. And he had lived in Dead River for a long time, keeping mostly to himself. But if these cruds thought Brute was going to have his way with him, he'd start the dance with or without the rest of the band.
Well, this Brute fellow sounds absolutely fascinating.
Oh, he is, sweetie. You two gonna get along just fine, I'm thinking.
Smoke had killed his first man back on the plains, back when he was about 15 or 16. He wasn't quite sure. And he had killed many times since then. But as accustomed as he was to the sights of brutality, He had to struggle to keep his lunch down when they passed by a line of poles and platforms and wooden crosses sunk into the ground. Men and women in various stages of death and dying were nailed to the crosses. Some were hung from chains by their ankles and left to rot. Some had been horsewhipped until their flesh hung in strips, and they had been left to slowly die in the sun. Smoke had never seen anything like it in his life. He turned his face away from the sight.
Yeah, that's what happens to people who try to cross the bar, Shirley. Or to people who come in here pretending to be something they ain't.
Nappy pointed to a woman, blackened and rotten death, hanging by chains.
She was a slave who tried to escape. Keep that in mind, sissy boy.
How hideous. What kind of place is this?
He really don't know. Boy, are we gonna have some fun with this dude?
I don't wish to stay here. Oh, this place is disgusting.
Smoke tried to turn Drifter. The outlaws escorting him boxed him in, none of them noticing the firm grip Smoke held on Drifter's reins, steadying the killer horse, preventing him from rearing up and crushing a skull or breaking a back with his steel-shod hooves. The bonnet had worked in disguising Drifter for what he really was. Well, worked so far.
You just hold on, Fancy Pants. You wanted to come here, remember?
But now I want to leave. I want to leave right this instant.
Sorry, sweets. You here to stay.
Jim Wilde looked at the late afternoon sunlight outside his office window. Sheriff Mike Larson was sitting across from him.
He ought to be in there by now. God have mercy on his soul. I guess I gotta say it.
Yeah, he's got more guts than I got, and I'll stand out in the middle of the damn street and admit that.
You told your boys not a word about this to anybody, right?
Damn well bet I did. I told them if they even thought hard on it, I'd catch the vibrations and lock them up.
The marshal knew the sheriff would do just that, too. Mike ran a good, solid, straight office in a tough town.
You got the final tally sheet of all that's going in, Mike?
Yep, the boy's gearing up now, quietly. 3 sheriffs, including myself, 20 regular deputies, 20 volunteers, all of them top riders and good with shotgun and rifle, and you and 10 marshals.
The other marshals will be coming in by train, 2 at a time, starting tomorrow at noon. They're going to stay low. I just wish we had some way of finding out how many hard cases we're going to be up against.
I think that's impossible, Jim. But if I had to make a guess on it, I'd say 200 at the low end. We're all going to tie a white handkerchief on our left arm so the Indians won't mistake us for outlaws. That is still the plan, ain't it?
Yeah, best I can come up with. I've already contracted for horses to be stashed along the way. So when we start riding, we ain't going to stop until it's over and done with. One way or the other.
Mike Larson chose not to elaborate on that last bit. He would tell his wife only at the last moment, just before he stepped into the saddle. It was not a job he looked forward to doing, but he knew it was a job that had to be done.
Where you got the horses?
We'll switch to fresh at Spanish Peaks, then again at La Vida Pass. The last stop will be at Red Davis's place. I ain't going to kill no good horse on that final run. Most of that is going to be uphill. Red has given us the best of his line and wanted to go in with us. I thanked him, but told him no. Told him he was doing enough by loaning us fresh horses.
Yeah, he's a tough old man, but you was right in refusing him. You think he took offense?
Nah, he understands. White Wolf says he'll have at least 30 braves around that town when Jensen opens the dance. And Jensen is going to start the music as soon as White Wolf signals him that we've left the trail and entered the pass. White Wolf says the guards along the road will be taken care of. Them Utes ain't got no use for anybody in Dead River. And I told the boys that volunteered that the reward money will be split up amongst them.
Well, that's good, but I don't like Smoke opening the show by itself. We're going to be a good 45 minutes of hard riding away from the town when he starts dragging iron and letting it bang.
I know it, but he was by himself when he met them old boys up there on the Uncompahgre. And he killed every damn one of them.
Yep. He sure damn did that, didn't he?
Unhand me, you beast!
A man stepped out of the bloody bucket and onto the boardwalk.
My, my, my.
What manner of creature do we have here, boys?
Is that sissy boy that draws them pictures, Mr. Davidson? The one that Cahoon told us about?
Where is my friend Cahoon?
How do you like our little town, Mr. DeBeers?
I think it is appalling and disgusting and most offensive, and I do not like being manhandled by thugs. Tell your henchmen to unhand me this instant.
Did you just tell me what to do?
Well, yes, I...
You do not give me orders. Around here, I give the orders, and you obey. I say who lives and dies, and who comes and goes. Do you understand that, Shirley?
Yes, sir.
A blow from Davidson had hurt. The man was no lightweight. He was big and muscled. Smoke decided to remain on the ground on his hands and knees until ordered to rise.
Here, silly boy. I'm king. You're nothing. However, if I decide you may live, and that is a big if, I might elect to make you my court jester. Would you like that, silly boy?
Yes, sir.
When you address me, silly boy, you will address me as Your Majesty. Now say it, you foppish-looking fool.
Your court... Yes, Your Majesty.
That's better, jester. Some of you men get this fool on his feet and drag him inside the saloon. I wish to talk with him about doing my portrait.
Smoke started to tell him that he didn't do portraits. He did sketches. Then decided it would be best if he just kept his mouth shut for the moment.
Come on, sissy!
Smoke let the hard cases drag him to his feet and shove him up the steps, onto the boardwalk, and into the saloon. The saloon, from what Smoke had been able to glean, the only one in town, was a huge affair, capable of seating several hundred people. There was a large stage on one end of the building. The stage had red velvet curtains. Smoke wondered who did the acting and singing.
Now sit!
Smoke was shoved roughly into a chair, and then, looking up, he got his first good look at Rex Davidson. The man was a handsome rascal, no doubt about that, and a big man, in his mid-40s, Smoke guessed, solid, with heavily muscled arms and shoulders, thick wrists, big hands. His eyes were cruel, but not tinged with any sign of madness that Smoke could readily detect. Rex leaned against a polished bar and smiled at Smoke, but the smile did not reach the man's eyes.
Talk to me, Jester.
About what, Your Majesty?
Good. Y'all see how quickly he learns? I think this one'll do just fine. Oh, my, yes. Where are you from, Jester?
I am originally from Pennsylvania, Your Majesty.
What city?
I'm not from a city, Your Majesty.
Oh? You certainly don't speak like a hick.
Thank you, Your Majesty. I was born on a small farm, but my mother and father were highly educated people. They taught us at home. There were no schools nearby.
Oh, thank you, Jester. And where did you learn to draw, Jester?
I suppose I was born with the talent, Your Majesty. My brother Maurice had the ability to write quite eloquently.
Ah, yes, Maurice. Did you tell Cahoon that this Maurice person had stopped by here?
That's what he wrote and told me. But I have no way of knowing if he did stop or not. Maurice, tends to story a bit.
I see. In other words, he's nothing more than a goddamn liar.
Yes, Your Majesty.
Where is he now, Jester?
I have no idea, Your Majesty.
I see. Does he look like you, Jester?
No, Your Majesty. Maurice was adopted, you see.
Rex's eyes grew thin as he stared at the man who had only a moment ago been carrying a tray of drinks. Now the smell of raw whiskey and beer filled the huge room. Shards of glass were scattered across the wood floor, shimmering in the afternoon sun.
You incompetent fool!
I'm sorry, sir. It was an accident.
Your services will no longer be needed here, idiot.
What?
I cannot tolerate clumsiness.
No!
Ah! Smoke watched it all, then remembered to put a shocked look on his face. Just in time, because Rex had cut his eyes and was watching Smoke carefully.
Oh, my goodness! That poor fellow.
Now drag him out here and sprinkle some sawdust over the blood spots. Let me tell you something, Shirley. Life is the cheapest commodity on the market around here. Bear that in mind at all times. Now then, how long were you planning on staying in my town?
My original plans were to spend about a week sketching the scenery, which I was told was lovely. Then I was going to resupply and move on.
A week?
Yes, Your Majesty.
Give me all your money.
Sir?
Smoke practically flew out of his chair. Smoke was jerked up from the floor and felt his face slam into the table. He tasted blood in his mouth.
Never question me, Jester. You will obey instantly or you will die. Very slowly and very painfully. Do you understand me, Jester?
Yuck, Your Majesty, just don't hurt me. I can't stand pain. It makes me ill.
Now, pick up your chair and sit. Now, give me your money.
Smoke dug in his trousers and handed the man his slim roll of greenbacks.
$60. I charge $10 a day to stay here, Jester, unless you work for me, which you don't. What are you gonna do at the end of 6 days, Jester? Oh, that was a slave being punished, Jester. We have many slaves in this town. Some live a long, long time. Others last only a few weeks. How long do you think you'll last, Jester?
I don't know, Your Majesty.
An honest answer. Now answer my original question, Jester.
Well, I suppose after my 6 days are up, I'll just leave, Your Majesty.
Smoke looked around. All the hard cases were grinning at him.
You think you'll leave, eh, Jester?
Yes, sir. I hope to do that.
Well, we'll see. If you behave yourself, I'll let you leave. Now, your money only allows you to stay in this protected town. You pay for your own food and lodgings. You may leave now, Jester. Welcome to Dead River, Mr. De Beers.
Smoke began walking toward the bat wings, half expecting to get a bullet in his back. It was a pleasant surprise when none came.
Come on, Drifter. It's gonna take a miracle for me to keep from shooting some damn fool in this town. We'll just take it one day at a time.
Pack horse rope in his hand, Smoke rode Drifter toward the far end of town, away from the sights and sounds and smells of the dead and slowly dying men and women at the other end of the town. He got the impression that hell must be very much like what he had witnessed coming in. One thing was for sure, he knew he would never forget that sight as long as he lived. He didn't have to sketch it to remember it. It was burned into his brain. Smoke pushed those thoughts out of his mind now and concentrated on his own predicament. He didn't have a cent to his name and had very few supplies left. Maybe enough to last a couple of days, if he was careful. Smoke Jensen, the most famous and feared gunfighter in all the West, didn't know what the hell he was gonna do.
So that's it. What a wretched excuse for a human being.
Abigail Reynolds' face mirrored her husband's shock and horror. Sally sat with her mother and father in the book-lined study of the mansion. It was her father's room, which few of them had dared entered when they were children. But Sally had never been afraid of doing so. She used to love to sit in her father's chair and look at all the books about law and justice. The three of them were alone. Her brothers and sisters had left for the evening, and the town was fairly buzzing about the news of the famous gunfighter who was soon to be arriving.
Why didn't you tell us when it happened, dear?
Because he told me he would kill you both. Then, after he left town, after killing that man, I just did my best to put the incident out of my mind, as much as possible. As the years went by, the memory became dimmer and dimmer. There is no doubt in my mind that Daggett is the same man who tried to molest me years ago.
Well, first thing in the morning, I shall inform the authorities as to this scoundrel's whereabouts. Then we shall begin extradition proceedings to have him returned to New Hampshire to stand trial.
Father, by the time you do all that legal mumbo-jumbo, the matter will most probably be taken care of, if it isn't already tended to. However, Smoke did suggest he cut off Daggett's head and bring it back here in a sack.
Oh, for heaven's sake! He was joking, of course.
Oh, no, Mother. He wasn't joking a bit.
Just exactly what is your husband doing while you are visiting here, Sally?
He's going to learn everything he can about the men who attacked me in a town full of outlaws, thieves, and murderers. Then he's going to kill every last one of them.
You're expecting us to believe he's going to attack all those men all by himself?
Well, he's found some help, and I think you will approve of his methods, Father, or what you think his methods will be in your New England straight-by-the-book mind.
You disapprove of law and order, Sally?
Of course not, Father. Your way works here. Our way works for us out in the West. This will not be the first time Smoke has taken on an entire town. I know this. I've seen him do it before. When Smoke gets his back up, you had better get out of the way, because he's going to haul it out, cock it back, and let it bang.
The finest schools in this country and Europe, and she hauls it out and lets a bang. Incredible.
It's just a Western expression, Father.
Oh, it's just that it's terribly difficult for us here in the long-settled East to fully understand the ways of the West, Sally. But we don't doubt for a moment what you've told us. Sally, when Smoke comes out here for a visit, will he be armed?
If he's got his pants on.
Yet another delightful colloquialism.
Here. This wire came this morning while you were both out. It's from Smoke.
Does it give instructions on what to tell the governor on his arrival?
Oh, you're both thinking my husband to be some sort of savage. Well, when he has to be, he is, to your way of thinking. Yet, he's a fine artist, well-read and highly intelligent. He knows the social graces, certainly knows what fork and spoon to use. But we don't go in for much of that where we live. In the West, eating is serious business and not much chit-chat goes on at the table. But I really think you'll like Smoke if you just give him half a chance.
I know we will, dear. And of course he'll be welcomed here. Now, please, tell us what is in the wire. I'm fairly bursting with excitement. Oh, John, this is the most exhilarating thing that's happened in Keene in 20 years.
Not yet, dear. Smoke hasn't yet arrived in town. Now, what does the telegraph say?
Smoke has been appointed a deputy U.S. marshal. This is from the marshal's office in Denver. He has entered the outlaw town in disguise. They'll wire me when the operation has been concluded.
Well, I'm happy to hear that your husband has chosen the legal way, Sally. He'll properly arrest the criminals and bring them to trial the way it's supposed to be, according to the laws of this land.
Father, do you believe pigs can fly like birds?
What? Of course not.
Father, the only law Smoke is going to hand out to those outlaws will be coming out of the muzzles of his 44s, and you can believe that.
But he's an officer of the law. More than that, he is operating under a federal badge. He must see to due process. That is his sworn duty.
Oh, he'll see that the outlaws get their due, Father. Trust me.